Session number 8320.
Mr. Davies, reel 6. Could you continue describing your route to Mesopotamia, Mr. Davies?
Yes. With you got in was HMT Britain, about 40 of us altogether, and finally we arrived up the River Tigris at Basra.
What were your first impressions of Basra and of the Mesopotamia area generally?
Not very nice, not very nice.
In what way?
Lack of variety of vegetation. There were only date trees, date palms, nothing else, not much vegetation. The soil there was very, very poor, sandy, and hadn't much interest.
What about Basra itself? What did you think of that?
Less. The buildings were really very decrepit, very poor. They were big enough, and some of the go-downs that there were there, the warehouses were quite big. Everything was done by hand, practically. To get to Basra City from Asher, where we got ashore at, they'd go up a big irrigation canal for about 2 miles further into the country. And we didn't see much of Basra at all. We came back to Asher and went to a barracks which the Turks had been in, and then the Devons were there then, and it had a great, this barracks had a great big massive door, real heavy gates, and went through there, and we were taken upstairs to about 2 stories up on one end of the whole barracks and fixed up with quarters. Four in each room there were. And we had a long dining table with a table in it was about 20 feet long, and we had our cooking done there as well. We had a sergeant named Kennedy from Manchester who looked after the catering. Then we had to go to little offices which were parts of warehouses, any old place kind of thing. We had, remember, one typewriter between 6 of us, and sometimes four of us in a little tiny room you could hardly turn round in. Accommodation was really very, very poor indeed. However, we got over that. We got additional accommodation round about, and finally we got settled down.
What exactly were your duties there? What were you doing as orderly sergeant? Could you tell me something about your work?
Yes. First of all, we had to get information from the people who'd previously handled the troops. So we got information from the ships, the reinforcements, and our own lot, of course. We had details of them before. And each man, or each man, officer, whatever, had one sheet for himself. And that was in a, what shall I say, in a folder. And I had then about 1,000 over 1,000 names to look after. And as anything happened to any one of them, that information was sent from wherever it was down to us, and we then recorded it in a nominal roll, which we'd made of all these single sheets, and anything that happened was collated, and information was sent to the record officer at Shrewsbury. Oh, no. I've forgotten the places now where we sent them to. Oh, and the Indian Army pay people, they needed that information so that they could record the the pay of the people, of the men, and we knew pretty well where every man was, because if one went to a hospital, we had a note from the hospital to say they'd got so and so in, and we recorded that, and that information was then passed to the people at Shrewsbury, and that occurred to all the units right through. We had nothing to do with arranging for reinforcements or things like that. That was done in another department of General Headquarters. That was the Adjutant General's branch, and we were the third echelon. And the time that we we worked was, it was beginning to get warm then, and we started at about, we roused Ray at about 7 o'clock, had a drink of tea, and then we had breakfast, fairly good. And then we had to walk up New Street up to our little offices. That was about half a mile. And then we stayed till 2 o'clock. If there was no particular action, then we went back again to the barracks and had a rest for the afternoon. And then we were available again at about 6 o'clock till 7 o'clock, and waiting for any information that had to be dealt with. And then the rest of the day was our own. Later, about a year after, we had some new offices built at a place called Makina Masseuse, meaning licorice factory. And that was all absolutely perfect, with new office blocks and plenty of space, a table to yourself, a typewriter to yourself, glass all round. And there were other institutions on that ground as well, attached to us, we were attached to them. And we even had a picture theatre there. I never went to it. And it was about a mile all the way around it, and it was all wired so that we were absolutely safe. And our accommodation then was four to a hut. We had better rations. Our rations were quite good. We got a lot of stuff from Australia and New Zealand. I can remember oak jam from Auckland, where my brother was. And then we had a lot of tinned rabbit, which you got a little bit tired of, but was very acceptable. Yeah.
So this third echelon was made up of the orderly sergeant of each of the battalions in the division, was it?
That's right, yes.
And you stayed in this unit for the first year until you were moved into this new.
Yes, we're still in the same all our division, all our 13th division were all together. There was one orderly room sergeant to eat, and a corporal, a sort of little clerk, you know. We were all still, our division was completely on its own.
In reserve then? It wasn't doing any fighting, it was in reserve?
No, nothing whatever. No, we were only pen pushers and typists, that was all. The other things now, it was very, very hot. One night we had a number of boys, they were knocked out with the heat. We had to put them into long keys filled with as cold water as we could, and we put the whole bodies in to bring the temperature down if it was possible. I think that night we lost about 9, and they were taken away in a cart the next morning. And
how did you react to the heat? How did it affect you?
It went very gingerly, very gently. And we had doses of quinine, which was a prophylactic and stopped you from getting heat stroke. And of course, in the afternoon, we didn't go out. We weren't allowed out. We stayed in the hut, drinking water, mainly. You had to keep drinking water. We had it in chardels, we call them. And we hung that chardel up just near the door. And any breeze that came kept that water nice and cool.
Did you have enough water?
Yes, we had enough water. Quite. We were well looked after in that respect, and we also had occasionally a bottle of beer, which of course we had to pay for. We had a coupon, and you could give it to your pal if you wanted, or you could get another one, and so on.
Did you have things like spine pads, or were you?
Oh, we had spine pads. Yes, we had spine pads, but we had no need. You only put them on when you were really going out in the heat. And
was there any problem with flies?
No, not there. We got the flies when I got up the line. Anyway, after I'd been doing that job for about 2 years, Major Stretch from the Royal Welsh came down to have a look to see what I'd been doing. And we went one morning, and then he came again in the afternoon, and then we had a good chat. Then, I've missed the parts where I went into hospital about 3 times with malaria. Not very bad, but just bad enough. And
there was no throwback to your dysentery again, was there? Or?
No, the dysentery dried up altogether. Motions were quite normal. Bowels not working too cleverly, but quite content. And Major Stretch, I told you, he had this second interview with me in the afternoon, and he said, "You'll hear from me again." So of course he went off up the line again. And then later on I had a wire from the battalion to say that I'd been accepted as a candidate for a commission. That was why we'd had this interview. And I had to go up the line then and rejoin my unit, and went up, had all working soldiers' kit again, and left my office again, and I was relieved by another sergeant who had come down the right line to take my place.
How did you feel about going back into the front line after 2 years in relative safety?
I looked forward to it. Yes. I was a bit browned off. Got a bit bored, you know, with this regular work. And anyway, went up on the railway up to Kerna. This is up the river by the River Tigris. And off there onto a P-boat, which took us up to Baghdad. And then from Baghdad, another rail journey up to a river called the Diyala River, a big river. And we had to cross. We got in a big boat, which held about 20. And that boat was fastened to a poles on each side of the river and hitched up with a rope. And when the boat was full at one side, it was allowed to run down in the current, and then the ropes at the top, they swung along, and we landed just a little bit lower down on the other side. It was a good way. This party of 20 were made up of fellows who'd been on leave in India or been in hospital and were rejoining the units. And we had to march then. And I remember we did 8 miles the first day, straight away. And then next day we did 15 miles. And the next day, about 6.
How did this strike you? Because you hadn't been doing much route marching, had you?
No, but I'd kept myself very fit with walking round that Maidan, you see, every night. I used to go round every night. That's why I didn't go to the pictures. I always made that my job. And then we did a bit of paddling in the irrigation creeks that ran from the River Tigris up various places like Cora Creek, Kandak Creek, then the one that ran to Basra. And we used to have a bellum. We had a bellum and we had paddles in it. And the 13 of us, our division, we paddled up. We had a cox at the back and 6 on each side, and we had competitions between us and other divisions going up these irrigation places. And anyway, I joined my battalion then at a place called Tijdari.
What was your reception there?
Oh, ideal. They knew all about me. And after I'd seen the commanding officer, what's his name now? Colonel Drummond Hay. He was killed just soon after. And yes. And then I was put in charge of a full platoon, about 50 men, just as I'd been in the Cheshires. And everything went quite nicely. Then I saw a brigadier. He asked me a few questions. And had to be dollied up for that, of course. All my buttons shining and so on. And he said, you'll be hearing from us again. Anyway, we had to get after the Turks then, and we went on some very big marches. I was battalion marker one night, and it was pouring with rain and black as ink. I had a hurricane lamp, and I was battalion marker, and the battalion was to come on level with me. Anyway, it was raining that heavy, we postponed it for about 2 hours. I came out again the next time on my own and dropped down a Lewis gun pit and sprained my ankle. A major stretch had seen me go. He'd watched the lamp fall down, and he helped me out of it. Anyway, I managed. We tightened the shoe up as hard as tight as I could, and stood there, and the battalion formed up on me, and then we went off on our first march in slush, deep slush, for about 6 miles, and we came to a river which was known to be full of saltpeter, and we rested there the day, and I bathed my feet in it all day, did nothing else, and my ankle eased up, and I was managed to travel then. Then we did some very long marches, and some starting at, say, 2 a.m. and go right through until probably midnight the next day. I don't know how many miles altogether, about 200 miles, I should think. Finally, we got within in the little foothills then, instead of the desert, and my platoon was put as the leading one in the whole lot, and the battalion came up behind me, and we had to go into sections. I was in the middle of them, and we marched off, and the battalion came on behind us. We were the first advance guard. If anything had happened, we had to hold that position and let the others get other positions behind. We were about 100 yards away from them, and went right on until we went on till night time, till about 6 o'clock, and then I ceased to have that post and was put on a hillside pretty high up, and we took the whole platoon there and split it up into its four sections, and we mounted guards all night through, protecting the flank of the battalion, which had stopped just in the valley below. We had no trouble, except that I had the job of seeing that the boys were changed around so they could get a bit of sleep. Anyway, the battalion moved off then in the morning, and we were then at the back of the battalion. We stopped another night. Then the next, not all the way through, because we were to make our attack on the Turks on the morning just at dawn. And we anticipated them being right in front of us. But we heard some dogs barking just as dawn came. And the next thing we saw was rifle fire coming from our right flank. As we were going up, so they had us enfiladed. So we got my party got down on the floor and we started with our little trench tools and made some cover. The bullets were flying over us beautifully. Nobody was hit. They were firing from the top of a hill and they were firing over the top of us all the time. The whole battalion then went over to an irrigation nullah about 200 yards, I should think, from where the Turks were, and we faced them then in the right position. That was then about 8 o'clock in the morning. We'd had no casualties yet then, and we turned round. I remember I felt as though I wanted to run, but I didn't do, and the lads stayed with me, the whole of the platoon, and we walked right comfortably that couple of hundred yards, and nobody was hit, and we got in this irrigation nullah. I was then at the right-hand side. My platoon was at the right-hand side of the battalion. We had a Lewis gunner attached to us, and the Turks then started to shell us, and they started giving us some casualties. Well, the first job I did when I got on in that nullah was, come on lads, you've got to dig this hole as deep as you can, and it'll probably save your lives. And it gave them something to do. We were all a bit shaky, and they worked like niggers. And then the shells became more frequent, and we started getting casualties. One friend of mine, Sergeant Tommy Campling, he was killed. He was shot in the back, and as he lay waiting to be taken away, he had another shell, and that took him as well, also in the back. So of course he died 2 days later. And a little chap who used to clean my buttons in the platoon saw that they were nice and tidy